This week on Vaticano, celebrate the 50th anniversary of diplomatic relations between Australia and the Holy See. Learn how St. Pope Paul VI's encyclical, Humanae Vitae, provides an important framework to discuss Africa's growing population. And we continue our journey in Ecuador on the Center, a family of families, and the Papal Foundation that makes that work possible. Vaticano starts now. On June the 7th, a new constitution will govern the Vatican City-State. This is quite a rare occasion. The last time the fundamental law of the Vatican City-State was changed was in the year 2000 by Pope St. John Paul II. The first constitution was issued in 1929, following the Lateran Pacts, which stayed in place until the turn of the millennium. But there are other factors that make the decision of Pope Francis to update this law remarkable. The new constitution empowers the laity by allowing laypersons to become part of the governing commission of the Vatican. Previously, only cardinals were allowed to be members. Also, it emphasizes the sovereign power of the Pope over the Vatican City-State. The Vatican is not a democracy, but an absolute monarchy, with the Holy Father as its ruler. Yet the new constitution has another objective, to establish greater transparency, a goal that has been central to Pope Francis's reform of the Curia, from 1 year ago. In a statement issued along with the new constitution, Pope Francis justified this new legal framework with the idea of modernization. He said that he issued it to meet the needs of our time. The needs of a modern government have changed dramatically since the turn of the millennium. In the end, the Vatican is a state that faces all the challenges other states are facing today, from digitalization to money flows, international transparency, governance requirements, and many more. At the same time, it's important to remember that this new law is not a revolution, but rather a renovation. It re-emphasizes the old idea that the city-state and its governorate is at the service of the successor of Peter and his mission to preserve and promote the Word of God to all people. The Vatican City-State does not exist for its own purpose, but is instead an instrument for evangelization. Recently, the Vatican's communications department presented a new document on social media. This pastoral reflection uses the parable of the Good Samaritan as an analogy in order to help make social media more humane. The Holy See has a lot of reach in new media. At Pontifex, the English-speaking Twitter account of Pope Francis, for instance, has 18.8 million followers. Across the other eight languages on this platform, he has more than 50 million followers. Add to that Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube, and many other social media channels with equally many followers. Given this influence and experience with social media, the communications department provides important guidelines for Catholics engaging with new media. Five things are described as pitfalls. First, the digital divide. We should be aware that not everyone has the same access to the digital world. Many are left out and left behind. Second, the digital space is a commercial space. We pay with our attention span for using platforms that appear to be free, but in fact have been created to earn money. Third, fake news is a growing concern. While everyone advocates for transparency, the lines between fact and fiction blur easily in the digital world. Fourth, the echo chamber phenomenon. Online, we primarily encounter people who share the same interests and ideas. That creates a new form of tribalism. Fifth, the misperceived anonymity of the digital space triggers aggressive and violent behavior. Many are therefore hurt in the digital world, having suffered from cyberbullying and exclusion. The Vatican reminds us that we need to be wise stewards of our time and not lose ourselves in the digital abyss. Especially families should rediscover the family meal without digital devices. Also, God can only be experienced in real life and real relationships. But this document is not a condemnation of everything digital. On the contrary, it is nuanced and encourages us to use social media along the lines of the parable of the Good Samaritan. Our digital encounters should be encounters of love, of help, and of support.
Hello and welcome to this week's Vaticano Updates, the most important news from Pope Francis and the Vatican. The Holy Father's prayer intention for the month of June is for the abolition of torture. Torture is not past history. Unfortunately, it's part of our history today, Pope Francis said in his video message. He concluded his message with a prayer. Let us pray that the international community commit itself concretely to abolish torture, guaranteeing support to victims and their families. Cardinal Matteo Zuppi arrived in Kiev on June 5th to carry out the peace mission entrusted to him by Pope Francis. Now, Zuppi spent 2 days in the Ukraine capital and, to quote, to listen in depth to the Ukrainian authorities about possible ways to achieve a just peace and support humanitarian gestures that may help ease tensions. Now, Pope Francis asked the Italian cardinal to serve as a papal envoy to initiate paths of peace between Russia and Ukraine. Pope Francis has backed a project aimed at enhancing interdisciplinary research at Catholic universities in the sphere of family, marriage, and childbearing. Now, the project, called the Family Global Compact, was presented by members of the Pontifical Academy of Social Sciences and the Dicastery for Laity, Family, and Life. Now, the compact includes a 50-page document outlining specific challenges faced by families today, followed by suggested solutions and actions to take. Now, the pontiff prayed for the victims of a train crash in India that killed at least 275 people. In his Angelus address, he said, I am close to the injured and their families. May our Heavenly Father welcome the souls of the deceased into his kingdom. Now, the crash was caused by an error in a passenger train's electronic signaling system, which led to its changed tracks and hit another train, which derailed. Now, the two trains were carrying 2,296 people in total when they collided. The Vatican announced that Pope Francis will visit Mongolia, the world's most sparsely populated sovereign country. Now, the Pope is set to travel there from August 31st to September 4th. The trip will make Pope Francis the first Pope to visit the Asian country that has a population of about 1,300 Catholics in a country of more than 3 million people. Thank you for watching this week's Vaticano Updates. My name is Benjamin Crockett for EWTN Vaticano.
In a few moments, we'll be back with more on Vaticano.
Pope Francis, like his predecessors, has really extended a hand out to the indigenous communities around the world and really promotes their voices, their expertise, in order to be able to address some of the challenges as well that we are facing today, for example, like climate change. So Miriam Rose speaks a lot. She's a custodian of traditional knowledge, including through her connection to the land. And today she presented Pope Francis with an image of what she describes finding God in nature, which for her is very much a part of her faith and her spirituality.
Dr. Miriam Rose Ungermeer Bauman is one of the most respected Aboriginal leaders in Australia and was at the Vatican last week to meet Pope Francis and inaugurate a new artwork at the Vatican Museums.
He goes out and meets people and stuff, and, you know, people gather around just to watch him and see him drive past in the poop mobile. And it was exciting. And then I knew that I was going there to hopefully catch up or meet him. And I said, oh my God, will I ever, when I got there, will I ever get a chance to meet him? And sure enough.
Ungermeer Bauman is an Australian Aboriginal teacher and artist who addressed the themes of spirituality, ecology, and reconciliation between the church and Australian Aborigines during her visit. Her visit coincided with Reconciliation Week in Australia, an annual celebration of Aboriginal history and culture, as well as the 50th anniversary of diplomatic relations between Australia and the Holy See.
Every year in Australia, we celebrate Reconciliation Week. It's the same week every year, and it's an opportunity for non-Indigenous Australians and Indigenous Australians to come together and find ways to continue the reconciliation journey, which began in 1967 when we had a referendum to remove discrimination against our Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander communities. This has continued over the years, and in 1992 we had a historic landmark decision in our Supreme Court to recognise Native Title, and that was on the 3rd of June. So that marks the end of our Reconciliation Week. This year, particularly because of our 50th anniversary, we invited this Aboriginal elder who's very well respected and has done a lot to promote reconciliation in Australia through her art and through education, Dr. Miriam Rose Ungumer Bauman. And she comes from a very remote community on the banks of the Daly River in the very central part of Australia. She's travelled for days to be here with us this week, and we're hosting a number of events to really bring her voice to the international stage.
During her stay in Rome, she met with Archbishop Paul Gallagher, Secretary for Relations with States of the Holy See, to discuss Indigenous affairs. Ungenmeer Bauman emphasizes that building bridges between Indigenous and non-Indigenous peoples must be understood in terms of reconciliation. During a panel discussion at the Australian Catholic University campus in Rome with Bishop Paul Tai, Secretary of the Section of Culture of the Dicastery for Culture and Education, she used the term walking in two worlds to describe the experience of being an Aborigine in today's world.
For us and my people, to enable us all to be able to function in this world, in this era, we've got no choice but to understand Westerners and how they live and function in towns and cities. You know, my community is in the bush and it's surrounded by nature. We live on the banks of a river called Daly River. And coming here sort of threw me. It's just cement walls here, buildings and all that, and some of the buildings are very old. And then it'll probably take me a while to settle and understand here, you know, and I suppose it's also the first time to come here. We've got to try and be there to be understanding of them and them of us.
While in Rome, she held talks with representatives from Caritas Internationalis and the International Union of Superiors General. She also participated in a mass marking the 50th anniversary of the first Indigenous liturgy. On this occasion, in 1973, a large number of Aboriginal people gathered in Melbourne for the first mass incorporating elements of Indigenous languages and culture. While there has been much progress in including Indigenous communities around the world, there continue to be many struggles and inequalities still faced by Aboriginal communities in Australia. Dr. Miriam Rose Ungenmeer Bauman's witness and bridge building has been an important sign of hope and reconciliation. Africa, the mother continent, the origin of human life and open to life, with the highest overall birth rate in the world. But its growing population is seen by some organizations and even governments as something that needs to be controlled, making aid conditional on access to contraception and abortion. With this backdrop, St. Pope Paul VI's encyclical Humanae Vitae of Human Life provides an important framework to discuss these issues. Professor Father Apollinaire Sibaka Sikongo, rector of the University of Mbujimayi in the Democratic Republic of Congo, spoke at a recent conference on Humanae Vitae in Rome. The hope is to distribute the encyclical in local languages to promote the sanctity of life in his country, exposed to almost three decades of conflict, including sexual violence and the trivialization of abortion.
Recently, an article was published in the UN stating that over 200 women received abortion care between April 11th and May 11th. This means that more than 200 children were killed in one region alone. The people who perform these abortions do it in good faith, as they say that these children are not wanted. They are the result of rape, so terminating their lives is not a problem. There is a social debate about these issues, but there is a prevailing culture that takes advantage of the general silence. There is a silence even within the church. For example, there have been 200 children who were aborted, and I haven't heard the church say anything about it. There is sometimes a terrifying silence.
A veces que es aterrador.
The professor says the silence extends to medical clinics, which promote the use of abortion and contraceptives to women, and are even sometimes supported by the church.
I have witnessed situations where in a hospital pharmacy, there is a religious sister there with posters promoting contraception and abortion programs. Sometimes it is out of ignorance, but many times it's done in good faith or complicity because these programs are funded. If they want their hospital to receive subsidies, they have to accept assistance that includes contraception and abortion. Even in the most remote villages, you can find health centers without microscopes, but with contraceptives, focusing on fighting against life instead of identifying diseases that people have.
This goes against the traditions and values of African society, which puts the family at the heart of its culture of life. Pope Francis visited the DRC earlier in 2023 and met many victims of the decades-long war, including women who had faced unimaginable sexual violence.
This country, so immense and full of life, this diaphragm of Africa, struck by violence like a blow to the stomach, has seemed for some time to be gasping for breath. This country and this continent deserve to be respected and listened to. They deserve to find space and receive attention. Hands off the Democratic Republic of the Congo. Hands off Africa. Stop choking Africa. Africa is not a mine to be stripped or a terrain to be plundered. May Africa be the protagonist of its own destiny. L'Africa sia protagonista del suo
destino. For Professor Sebaka, part of the solution is through promoting the dignity of human life through the message of Humanae Vitae.
It is a small booklet that will allow us to spread the message because Humanae Vitae corresponds with our culture. When I talk to an elderly woman in a village about Humanae Vitae, she can relate because that's how she was raised. However, with the new generations and the influence of media, if we don't wake up, we will have a society corrupted by the culture of death and the destruction of sexuality and the relationship between a man and a woman. We assert our viewpoints in the face of pressure. The value of sexuality and the value of embracing life are crucial. These are things we need to learn from Humanae Vitae.
Reaprender con Humanae Vitae.
Professor Sebaka will hold a conference on the culture of life versus the culture of death in Africa later this year, with 15 lectures addressing these issues. We'll be back after a short break with more on Vaticano. Experience Quito, Ecuador through visiting service volunteers at the Center, a Family of Families. We bring you the third of a five-part series following their work and the Center's connection to the Papal Foundation, the only U.S. charity that exclusively fulfills the requests of the Holy Father.
Hola, hola, buenos días. Francis. My name is Olivia Young, and I'm collaborating here at the Center of Family of Families in Quito, Ecuador. I pray that you continue to share the Jesuits' mission of accompaniment, and may the world continue to follow your example. Our mission here is to walk alongside the vulnerable and the marginalized. I pray that our work, truly a work of God, continues on. Since our inception in 1964, we have served and accompanied more than 7,000 families. An average center member lives on $2.45 a day. Nearly 300 tons of food since March of 2020 were provided to our families as well as to the local community. And then in 2022 alone, more than 34,000 hours of social work as well as pastoral care were provided to our community. We also have an impact report done that shows that 75% of our community leaves the cycle of generational poverty forever. We offer this type of service learning experience for high schools, parishes, colleges to learn about what service looks like. I always say it's like planting the seed, and it really is something so important and critical for our mission to continue, is so that people know about our work.
The center is one of our partnerships that we come into contact with. Being a family of families and underlining with the Jesuit values and the mission just works so well with what we want to do at Spring Hill College and what we want our students to see.
The most meaningful one for me would be the Minga, because we worked with the family and it was my community with their community all together.
Is an indigenous word that means community work group. So it is everyone coming together. It could be staff, it is our volunteers, it is our visiting groups. Our families as well participate in Mingas. So we go to a family's house and help in any sort of project they may need. And since 1995, we've had over 550 Mingas.
La sala aquí. La sala para que se sienten aquí. Aquí duerme el Joel, le hicimos así con unas cortinas para que él duerma aquí.
Tiene su privacidad.
Sí, aquí tenemos mi ropa de Jocelyn, aquí los platos, nada más. Esta es mi cocina. Aquí cocino y aquí en esta mesa siento para picar.
Tengo dos hijos. Tuve tres, pero una niña perdí. Y tengo dos, que es Jocelyn Gavín, que tiene 13 años, Joel, que tiene 22, y mi esposo Eduardo, tiene 46, y yo tengo 45. Nosotros nos casamos el 4 de febrero del 2021, ya 3 años. Y tenemos un cuartito, ahí dormimos yo con la Jocelyn y mi esposo. Irme a vivir allá porque aquí me entra mucha agua y allá por lo menos, aunque con zinc, aunque no sea losa porque no hay para losa, aunque sea con zinc, pero voy a estar un poquito mejor por el baño y mi familia, como digo, mis hijos y el centro. Ah, son mi familia. Porque yo más antes tenía muchos problemas y esto de la psicología me ha ayudado mucho. He podido sobrellevar estos últimos tiempos, nos estamos llevando bien. Claro que en un hogar siempre hay problemas, pero Sí, sí nos estamos llevando un poco mejor. Hemos dejado muchas cosas, dando gracias a Dios, al centro, que sí nos ha apoyado. Y eso hay que aprender a valorar y a recibirlos con los brazos abiertos. Y confiar en Dios.
Next week on Vaticano, we show the connection between the image of Our Lady La Dolorosa and the center in Quito, Ecuador, and offer a look at the pastoral and medical care that helps members live well, physically and spiritually.